everybody, and welcome to an Out of This World Wild Ride with Steve-O. We've got one of the founding members of Blink 182, Tom DeLonge, who happens to be an expert on UFOs and aliens, and maybe in some trouble with the government. It's wild, and he might be about to scare you a little bit, talking about aliens, how real they are, the UFOs. Maybe there's threats that you can't even see. Actually, you know what? There are definitely threats that you can't even see. I don't know if they're aliens, but there are definitely people creeping into your phone, creeping into the computer, hopping on the Wi-Fi, stealing your information and your money. Not cool. That's why I use NordVPN, because I don't need people stealing my information and my money. That's what NordVPN does. It's called Virtual Private Network, and it just makes it so that nobody even knows where you are. And not only does that make you safer from cybercrime, but this is the best part. You can just be anywhere in the world that you choose. Right now, I'm at home in Los Angeles, right? If I wanted to use my NordVPN to just be in England, because in my opinion, British people make way better television, maybe I want to watch all the cool shows in British Netflix, no problem. And guess what? I'm about to leave my house, go to the airport, and fly to England, and that's where I'm going to be this weekend when the UFC fights are on. But do you think I'm going to let the out of range, whatever, you know, not in the boundaries of where you can watch? No, because I'm going to be in England, and I'm going to actually be in America watching the fights, because I got NordVPN. It's the best, the greatest, and man, they're going to hook you up. They've got a deal for you. If you go to nordvpn.com/Steve-O, or just use the promo code Steve-O, you get a huge discount on your plan, plus they'll throw in an extra month totally for free, and it's risk-free with the 30-day money-back guarantee. But I don't know how you couldn't be more than satisfied to know that you are protected from cybercrime, enjoying awesome content from all over the world, and you're getting a huge deal for it. So go to nordvpn.com/Steve-O, or use the promo code Steve-O to jump on this deal, because, man, I don't want you getting robbed, and I want you to support the podcast. So get on over to nordvpn.com/Steve-O, and let's get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom DeLonge.
Hi. Hello.
Yeah, dude. This is my co-host, Scott Randolph.
What's up, Scott?
Greetings.
Yeah, thanks for doing this, man. We've just worked our way into your day of recording.
Yeah, yep. I fucking walk outside and there's like a van. No, actually, what really happened, let me actually tell you the real story. I walked into the kitchen and the dog is sitting there like perfect, like a fucking canine from the FBI. And I found out that one of the Groms gave him some bacon.
Yeah.
So I get it. And I come out and here's the van. You got air conditioning. You let me choose the color. I'm like, this is like the easiest interview ever. You got an awesome dog. And it's cool in here, and you know, you guys are just quality people, you know.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. So what is it that you're recording?
I'm recording guitars, and I'm doing working on a live album for Angels and Airwaves right now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good shit, man. So we're about the same age, dude. I was born in '74.
But you're so much more mature than me. You know, that extra year you got on me is like super, like just life experience, you know.
I mean, who knows, man? It's good stuff. I had an experience, you know, I was on Cameo for, I think it was, like, I was on Cameo for a minute there, and I had, like, the one request that came from, like a legit thing was Blink 182.
Yeah. What request? In what way?
What they requested for you to do a cameo for them?
To promote some. I forget if it was a music project. You know.
That's rad. Like record labels are going to Cameo. Girl, we need to get some like fucking some quality people to talk about that.
Yeah, like restaurants are getting Snoop to like promote for their business, you know? It's like,
yeah, Snoop's like, it's usually $50K, but on Cameo, it's like $1,500 and yeah. It's a workaround.
I know, it's weird.
And I was so happy to do it, and I recorded this video saying that in year 2000, before Jackass came out, and while I was working as a circus clown in a flea market.
Everyone starts out things this way.
I was at a Blink 182 concert in Miami. I believe it was American Airlines Arena. And I started out at the top of the arena and walked down all the stairs just in one of the aisles, like on my hands in a handstand.
That's funny.
That one, I was just really, really proud of that. I also once got kicked out of a Kiss concert for breathing fire in the audience.
Because they don't like fire in Kiss. They've never used it. They don't like it.
Well, the band wasn't mad at it. Well, actually, maybe the band was mad because I blew a bigger fireball than Gene Simmons.
That's what I'm saying. It's really about egos here. Yeah, that's funny.
I'm surprised you guys never crossed paths in the early 2000s.
We did. I met you, Bam, and some of the other dudes at a few places. It was always like in a crowd backstage or at like a snowboard event or a skate event or some shit. But we did, but it's not like we ever hung. But the thing that's funny is like growing up a skateboarder, that was like my life, right? And my friends were Blink came out of a group of skateboarders that was exactly like you and all your buds. Like, so it's funny when I met them or we crossed paths or whatever, it's really the same culture. It's different than skateboarding now in many ways where, you know, now you got a helmet and a skate park. It's like we'd fucking jump people's fences when their pool wasn't full yet. You know, that's the only pool you got, you know, until they catch you. So the culture back there was super unifying and like the Warped Tour and all that shit. So like, whenever we would hang with anybody affiliated with you and your friend groups and all the Jackass shit, like it was very like, oh yeah, these are like my neighbors, you know, these are the dudes I skate with every day. And I try to explain that to people about growing up in skateboarding that way. Like, you know, that's where Blink came from. Except we were also kind of involved in surf too. I wasn't into surfing, but Taylor Steele and all that shit, they had a really strong culture too. But they're like the Colgate smile, like good looking surfers and shit. Like skateboarders were all looking dirty and slamming on the concrete. It's a little bit different, you know?
Yeah. When, early 2000s, when we would have met, like how loaded would you have been?
On drugs or what?
Or
money?
I mean, drugs.
How rich were you?
I didn't know. I was like,
such a great answer.
Both good questions.
You know, I don't know. Well, back then, like, I was always a stoner. I had a lot of fun with pills, narcotics for a long time, and that almost fucking killed me. So I think I got out of that. Alcohol was, I used to tell people I don't drink because I don't like alcohol. Well, I drink when I play shows. Well, I play shows 10 months out of the year. And I was like, fuck, you know, like, I was like, fuck, I'm like, you know, you walk around with like, no, I don't drink that much, you know, but then I'm like, fuck, I've had my time, you know, and I'm just thankful that I got out of it decently clean, you know, but it's hard, like, you know, it's like, it's fucking hard to be young, traveling around with a job where you don't really have a boss, you know?
Right.
And you're kind of like rewarded for being a shithead, you know?
And you work 1 hour a day.
And you could choose if you even want to do that, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, I went through the airport with somebody and they're like, oh, I got weed on me. And I'm like, you have weed on you through the airport? He's like, yeah, you can't do that. And it's like, you guys grew up in the generation where you were touring where you couldn't even like smuggle weed through the airports.
One time, because we would get these fucking, we would get these like private like shuttles at airports so kids wouldn't bother us.
Yeah.
And so I remember this one time I had a bunch of weed in my suitcase and because, you know, whatever, I could see them checking my pockets and my carry-on, but the shuttle group with just our band took us into a private office and said, okay, they're going to bring security and just check your luggage here. And I was like, okay, well, I wonder if they're going to go in my suitcase. I thought it would just run through an x-ray, not a big deal. Well, there's two dudes, and while one guy's looking at one guy's looking at the other, I just kind of open mine up, and I just fucking, I shuffle something, and then the guy gets up and leaves. The other person goes, hey. And I go, what? He goes, he went to go get more security because they saw all this fucking pot in my bag. And I was like, shit. So I just grabbed it and I ran out of that room and I took off down the terminal to a bathroom and like fucking threw it all away. I come back and there's three of the big fucking security dude, authority dudes in there, and they don't find anything. I'm like, hey, what's going on? Yeah, they obviously didn't find anything. So I'm like, okay, maybe I'm cool. And then I get in the car, they lock everything up, and I get in the car. Now they're driving us on the tarmac to the airplane just to skip the gate and everything. And I'm like, okay, we're cool. And then right before we get to the plane, a cop car right behind us on the tarmac. And I was like, fuck, I hope they're not here for me. Like, I don't know what they're here for, you know? But then all of a sudden, like, we get on the plane and that cop car just parks and they come on and then they're on the plane looking. And I'm like, fuck, I hope they're not here for me still, you know? And that's all cool. And that didn't happen. So then we're flying. And then right when we land, my security guard goes, you just go straight to the van. Don't get your luggage, you know? And so I did that. And turns out they put these stickers I didn't even know existed on my luggage. It says the letters DE, which means drug enforcement. So they just, if they think there's something there, they stick it and they call ahead. And so if you see cops at a baggage claim waiting around, they might be looking for that sticker. They'll grab that luggage. And that happened. So my bag came out with drug enforcement stickers on it. And my security guard, my bodyguard dude, just ripped the stickers off and took it because he knew what to look for. So it's kind of fucking...
What a great story that was.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like...
I really enjoyed
that. But you know what's stupid about it? It's fucking pot. It's like, dude, this isn't like... I mean, right. Dude, this is like literally the one thing that doesn't kill you and doesn't addict you and doesn't really fuck you up other than you eat a little bit and say some dick jokes. But like, it's so retarded. Like, the whole thing around weed and...
Yeah.
You know?
Did you have any cool places where you used to try to smuggle drugs in different states or countries?
My butt. Like, I was never pulling that shit, like, international. Like, the last thing you want to do is go to jail in fucking Peru or something. Not that we ever toured Peru, but you found a dog in Peru, which is awesome. So I never did that. You just try and find things there. But I wasn't really into... I wasn't that gnarly about it like back then. Like now I kind of go, if I go on tour, like how do I get weed? It's so boring. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know? But back then I was like, I just wasn't that crazy about it. Or I had prescription pills. That was like my thing. Cause I broke my back. Like I had like multiple herniated discs and they broke in pieces tangled in my sciatic. I was like on a cane for like a year.
How'd you break your back?
Well, just long time playing guitar, hunched over, and launch ramps. Remember launch ramps were so big, dude, when we were younger?
Yeah.
What the fuck were we thinking? Up and then slam up like 8 feet, bam, over and over again. And then we're like, maybe that wasn't the smartest way to do it, but.
Did you ever like ollie off the launch ramp, or was it you're an early grabber?
I was an early grabber because I just never had the chops to do
me either.
Transitions. Like, oh, you make me feel better. Okay, good.
Yeah, me either. I had a little phase of ollieing off them, and it was very brief.
Remember Nottis?
Oh, my God.
Nottis.
It breaks my heart that he doesn't follow me back on Instagram. I have a Nottis board that I made into a... like where the wheel, or my girl made it for me. The wheels are light bulbs. It's on the wall, so it's a lamp.
That's sick.
It's the, dude, it's got trucks and the wheels are light bulbs.
There was like a whole time frame in skateboarding where it's like, Nottis Cop is Nottis Cop. It was like the raddest name.
He's the raddest. He's just the raddest guy there ever was. I mean.
Dude, he would do shit, but he would ollie off these launch ramps and embankments, and he's like 18 feet in the air, and you're like, whoa.
Right, when he board slid the crossbar on the Jeep.
Oh, dude, you know who else is rad like him? Is Jeremy Klein. Jeremy's a friend of mine, and I haven't talked to him in years, but I used to skate with him all the time, and Jeremy was like that, like, where here's like a beautiful ledge to skate, and he's like, but look at that little bump over there with weeds on it, and a rock, and like trash, and he goes to that. One time I slammed so hard that I thought I was dying, right? And he comes right past me, and I'm in the worst pain still. I haven't like come out of it yet. I'm like literally think I'm dying. And all he says is, that's what you get for ollieing, because he spent the whole day doing slappies. Just fucking slappies. And because I ollied and ate shit, like.
So rad, man. Like, he was in the Rubbish Heap video, which.
Dude, I remember that. I don't remember the video, but I remember that name.
The Rubbish Heap video was Spike Jonze's first ever video project.
Spike Jonze.
There was a video for World Industries. Jeremy Klein was in it. Jeremy Klein was in The End and everything. I love that we have the skateboarding in common.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever do like an early grab 360 off a launch ramp?
Fuck no, dude. I'm like straight up melancholy's methods and shit. Maybe try a judo. yeah, back dude, in the nice. Day. You know, like, I remember the day I was skating this place, and, like, this dude shows up with pitch black hair, punk rock dickies and shit, and he's doing 360 fucking varial flips or something to disaster slides, and it was Hensley.
Wow.
And I was, like, floored, because this is that at that moment, he is the guy for street.
Sure.
You know, he was, yeah. And I remember, like, going, I don't know if my fucking judo is good enough, you know, but I couldn't flip the board. I mean, now these Groms are like fucking 360 flip. They stand in a parking lot and do it for months until they can do it. And I was like, I can't do that. Like,
it's so insane. I don't know how a kid could be introduced to skateboarding for the first time, see what the pros are doing, and be like, oh, dude, I'm going to get into this.
It's so gnarly. I mean, it's so gnarly that people are like, well, kickflip is just like the beginning of what I'm doing in the air.
Right.
It's just like the first of three things I'm doing. Yeah, it's good. Just, but the flipping stuff was just taking off when I was skateboarding, because I really stopped skating when I got out of high school and I started touring, and I was like, I can't break my wrists.
Did
you
graduate high school 93?
93, yeah. Yeah, so I had to like, I just couldn't do crazy shit. I was always like going on tour. So
that's crazy that Blink was formed when you were still in high school. Then,
16, huh? Yeah. That's why the dick jokes were just so great, you know, like, because we were just right in the middle of where, yeah, when they should have been great.
And so now you've got, are you more in like the TV film stuff than music?
Kind of both, but yeah, I'm pretty heavily into the film stuff. I put out a movie called Monsters of California. I made a movie called Monsters of California. We launched the teaser trailer for it a few weeks ago, hoping that'll come out this year. But that's like this rad indie story about three skateboarders, but our kind, you know, like just actual like fucking dirty dudes. And it was funny, which was funny because every time I was talking to people in Hollywood about this, like, or when I was getting it developed and setting it up, I was always just like, okay, you know, when I say skateboarding, I was like, it's not what you think, because I know what you're thinking. You see kids with helmets running around all perfect, like a skate park. It's like, and I would always go back, oh, it's like Steve-O and Bam and the guy. I mean, that's my friends, okay? That's who I grew up with. Just picture those guys as my best friends. You know, that's who's in this movie, you know? And you can cast skateboarders and stuff, but for me, we did like, I found three dudes that are like, you know, they're like 17, 18 years old is what they play. And, but they're just edgy, just boys, you know, and it's cool because I until mid 90s, when Jonah Hill did mid 90s, I was like, I've never seen anything where they captured skateboarding in the way I knew it.
Right.
And that really reminded me of like the hot summer days, like getting into trouble and everyone's really rough around the edges, you know? So Monsters of California is these three skateboarders get all fucked up, mixed in with all this paranormal stuff, government stuff, and there's UFO stuff, and then that kind of was the beginning of setting up like a whole bunch of other films that I'm doing. These are big science fiction things.
Yeah, I saw like was it like a Deadline article about like you've got like a series based on your book about UFOs, and then now there's like a subsequent series to that.
Yeah, so Legendary picked up my books called Secret Machines. It's like these 700-page novels that are about UFOs, story about UFOs, but it's all government. It's all like military-industrial complex. Think like Area 51, CIA, Department of Defense, and then their counterparts in other countries. And then intermixed with that is some of the things flying around are totally different entirely, you know? And so it's a big deal because this is the true story of UFOs, of what's been going on with our government and everything else, so.
I think Tom DeLonge might be out of his mind because the guy's just like trying to get himself in trouble with the government. And that's crazy. You could say that he's living on the razor's edge. And when it comes to my razor's edge, I only go to one company. It's called Harry's. They make the best and no frills, classy, good-looking shaving products that are so affordable. And I gotta say, I am embarrassed of all the years that I used those vibrating, gimmicky, like super overcharging, dumb razors, because Harry's just, it's everything I need. And if you're a first-time Harry's user, man, are they going to hook you up. You go to harrys.com and you get the starter kit, which is the weighted ergonomic handle, the 5-blade razor. You got the travel case, which protects the razor, and you've got the foaming shave gel. It's everything that you need. It's a $13 value, and they're going to give it to you for only $3. Man, once you try Harry's, you're never going to go back to all that gimmicky nonsense that everybody's paying so much money for that they just don't need. Harry's is everything you need, and I love it, and I love you, and I know you love the podcast, so support the podcast by getting this great deal on your starter kit by going to harrys.com/stevo. Yeah, dude. Now, let's hear about this crazy government. I think that there's two things that really strike me as crazy about the developments with UFOs. Number one, it's crazy that the government is all of a sudden just sort of saying, yeah, UFOs are real. You know, there's like, you know, all this, like the government acknowledging.
You know, we did that. I did that. Wow. That's why they're doing that.
But what's even.
I don't say that. I sound like a dick when I say that. But I'm like, that's why. I have, there's a whole story here, but keep going.
It's crazy to me that the government's acknowledging UFOs are very real. And it's even crazier that news comes out and like everyone's like, oh,
yeah, they're all like, yeah, but interest rates are gnarly and like fucking COVID. You're like, what the fuck? Like, that's how a lot of us. So what happened was, is that book Secret Machines, I wrote that with an author and I started my company To the Stars, and we're going to publish a book. And then when I put it in there, because I studied UFOs for like 20 years, and I was like, I figured out what's going on. Not just like the bullshit you read or thing. Like, I figured out what's going on. And I was like, shit, if I put this out there and open my big mouth, I might get in a lot of trouble. So I should probably go ask for some permission. So I spent like a long time working my way in. And then I got into a group of people and they brought me in, and I was given all the permission. So then I come out with the book and I go on national radio and all this shit. Well, apparently that group didn't really talk to another group of some other 3-letter places, and those other places got really fucking pissed because here's this fucking rock star kid like telling the biggest national security secrets that we got, period. And so they came and they were like, we need to know who the fuck you are and who the fuck you're talking to and all this crazy like Ed Snowden type shit.
Wow.
And I was like, hold on. And I had to explain that, like, all this really classified crazy shit, I figured that out on my own. I don't have anyone passing me, like...
It's like, yeah, fucking, dude, I'm sorry, man. I was tripping balls.
I know. Dude, I'm all... Sorry, I was stoned one night, and I just kind of fucking did a puzzle, and I was like, whoopsie. Whoa. You know? So what happened then was, you know, Hillary Clinton was running for presidency against, I guess it was against Trump, and John Podesta was her campaign manager.
Okay.
At the time, he was also senior advisor to Obama. So I was holding conversations with Podesta to get to Obama, and I had two multi-star generals from Space Command and the head of Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, that Skunk Works built Area 51, their elite engineering division. I had them all on this like fucking emails, and we're setting up these conference calls and stuff. Well, Hillary Clinton's campaign got hacked by the Russians, WikiLeaks, and it outed all this shit about Podesta and her. And what happened with that was when all these news journalists were pouring through WikiLeaks to see what spilled from Hillary's campaign, they found these fucking emails with me and Podesta talking to these generals about UFOs. So Wall Street Journal threw that onto the Wall Street Journal. And then I was like, fuck, I'm fucked. And I'm like out there like fucking erasing computers and doing all this different, I didn't know what to do. And at that time, all these other government people that came out.
Let me ask you, why would that be a problem for you if, I mean, there's nothing wrong with exchanging emails with.
That wasn't the issue. The more of the issue was like, the more of the
high
issue.
Clearance security.
Just all these guys are holding the secrets of the universe. And it's a much, what would happen in conversations is I just knew things. So I would say it. They might not say something back, but I'm kind of thinking that any of those conversations should not be fucking poured over by anybody that wants to just come in and just like make a name for themselves at the Bureau, you know?
All right.
So I'm just like tripping like, fuck. And then
I can see that.
Yeah. So what happened, though, is it gave me all this credibility, because then all of a sudden all these other people in the government knew that I was like hanging around with some big boys. So they all came out and said, there's a better way to do what you're doing. And then that's when my company was a lot, just me, it became something bigger. And so the company came out to the public, founded by myself, one of the heads of the CIA, and the head physicist for the UFO program. And then I hired the program director, the guy that ran the UFO program. And then I brought on another like 8 people from the DOD and the CIA. So they're all part of my company. And the first thing we did was take those videos to the New York Times and out the program. And then we went and spent 2 years briefing all the committees in the Senate and Congress and the director, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. So now you're seeing hearings. The DOD admitted UFOs are real. The Navy admitted, that's all us. The hearings at Congress and the UFO, the UAP task force, that's all that. We started all of that. And it all started with me just being a little punk rock kid, just going, I'm going to fucking do this. Not really knowing what I was playing with, you know?
So I mean, it's super impressive. And I love how well you communicate too. Your ability to tell stories is really...
Well, thank you.
He's a highly evolved being.
I'm just a very spiritual dude, man.
Dude, I love it. Can you help us understand what's the significance of UFOs?
Like, they're not coming from... Well, I should say it this way. The significance of UFOs is multiple parts, but number one, it's not what you think it is. It's not coming from other planets. The evidence doesn't suggest that.
Interdimensional.
Yes. And the reason is because time is time is parallel. It's not linear, or it's not like we start here and go forward in time. Time is side by side, which means everything in the past and the future is existing in this moment, but within different frequencies. So a civilization that's at the end of their technological cycle could build a submarine that changes its voltage and materializes in that same location, just into our timeline. And then fucking, okay. It's crazy.
That was well articulated. I like that.
Have you ever had any like glitches in the Matrix where like
yes,
time sped up for you, or like I've had that a couple times.
Weird things. So fuck this. Yeah, yeah. When I got more into this, so there's a consciousness aspect to this. Like you have to think of like consciousness is like. It's like the mind of God, you know? It's not a dude in a toga with a crown of thorns making Jupiter. You know, it's like
right. Everything
you see is one band of frequencies. Yeah. The highest frequency is light, unified mind. The lowest frequency would be blackness, absence of love, absence of whatever. Right. And physical matter is somewhere right in the middle, right? So you have the ability to tune up higher or tune down lower, and behavior and all these things and time, and it all fucking comes together. But what it means also is that your brain is what's called a transducer. You're an antenna. Consciousness.
That's what I was saying to
Duncan Trussell.
Yeah, Duncan Trussell.
So you create matter. And when you think something, it creates it. You're not reactionary to your environment. You're actually proactive, and you just don't know it. So it really matters what you choose to see and feel, because that's literally what's being created for you. And people don't know this shit. So when you're like really into some crazy shit, the universe will start creating things, and we just think it's paranormal.
Yeah.
Like, for example, at UCLA, they were studying poltergeist events, and they found out that you can see a book move on the shelf and it scares you. But if you see a book move on the shelf and it scares the shit out of you, that book will then fly off the shelf and try and hit you. So the more scared you get, the more shit starts happening. And they didn't know why. Well, the reason is you're a transducer of your environment. You're an antenna plugging into all these frequencies. And once you go, oh, that book is moving, it'll move. You know, so it's fucking crazy. It's like our universe, it's just not what we think it is. And the whole thing with UFOs is that they're fucking around with us because of that, you know?
Is it not, think of UFO as like a vehicle,
right,
which aliens are gonna travel in.
Yeah.
And so should we not be using the term aliens?
Yeah, alien UFO? Is hard only because it's like, that makes us think it's coming from Mars or some shit or a different planet. Right. These are more like entities. These are more like, a lot of them are, there's like clones. that are like just fucking like, you think we made Dolly the sheep and we think that we're like, you think that's all we've done in the 60s, we cloned a sheep. We might be a little bit more advanced than that. Right. So what is something else that's super advanced doing AI and creating things that can fly around and tamper? Well, are they little program bots? Well, where's like the mainframe? Well, maybe the ship is alive in a mainframe, biological organism, but it's metal and whatever, but there's an intelligence to it because it's so advanced.
Okay.
So the theory that they started showing up at the time we did nuclear weapons, they're not here to protect us, they're, because that would be... not interdimensional, that'd be from like outer space
coming to protect us. No, interdimensional, because the one thing we found out is that the EMP wave from a nuclear blast kind of travels through multiple dimensions. So it's like that energy is fucking up whatever's in that location, and maybe those people are like, what the fuck was that? Let's materialize into that other timeline and get those motherfuckers to stop. But the reality is, too, is UFOs have been around forever. Like, you're talking biblical, you're talking religions,
you're talking the pyramids.
The pyramids, you're talking the Star of Bethlehem is not a star. The sun is big. The Star of Bethlehem is like a little ball of light that three dudes on horses followed for days, and it hovered over a manger. So think about that. What is that? Ezekiel's wheels, you know, Fatima in Portugal. All these religious events are always the same thing. And you got to then go, well, what are they doing? What is happening from that? Well, we start cults. We go crazy. We create different religions. We have different belief systems. We get really scared because they prophesize the end of the world. They tell you that if you do something wrong, you're going to go burn in hell for eternity. But if you listen to what that voice is in your head, that's God. So do that. And then someone hears a burning bush and they go and start a religion. You know, it's like holograms and technologies and making people not... be together, you know, making us think that there's a dude like Allah or Jesus that created the universe versus source intelligence, which is like your bandwidth, your fiber optic cable just to like consciousness, which is like the one power that powers the atom that permeates everything, and we're all from it. But as long as we think it's a dude and that group over there thinks it's a different dude, we're gonna hate each other, right? And we don't really evolve and we don't really grow spiritually. You know?
I'm sure you've heard the story. I went down the rabbit hole with, they brought people to Alpha Centauri to live, like 13 people.
And the Serpo.
Is that true? I mean, what is that different than like what's going on now? Like, are stories like that true?
I don't buy those. I at all. But I do know some fucking crazy shit where like. It makes you kind of wonder about the other stuff. So, for example, there's a document that leaked that described something coming from another planet, and then it hit like a meteor, and then it all came down, and then we retrieved these bodies and the craft and whatever. So I knew this document, and then I was in a meeting, I can't say with who and what it was all about, but I found out during that meeting that was misinformation, the part about the meteor and coming from another planet. And then they leaked the document. And the whole point was for us to keep thinking these are coming from planets and shit. Because it's a lot less scary, you know, to think, well, they're super far away, so it's hard for them to get here, right. You know? But the reality is like the misinformation placed in documents that are already leaked on purpose is to slowly inoculate us and to be okay with things over time. It's a lot easier to go, well, they're not coming from other planets, they're coming from here. But you already knew about them, so it's not as scary. It's not too much thrown on you at once. But the absurdity that comes along with this stuff is insane. Like, in the sense of, like, dude, I've been told so many fucking stories. There's, like, shit where things just show up and they look, you know, totally human. And then you turn around and it's not even there. But you're on a ship in the middle of the Atlantic and you're on an aircraft carrier. And it's like there's a human standing there telling you to get the fuck out of the area. And then you turn around and that fucking human's not even there. You know, so you're kind of going, well, did we go to another planet? Like those things suggest. What I would say is there is potential that something like that happened. But I would say 70% of what's in there is probably untrue or something. I think that there are things on other planets. But I think that what's really going on is like space-time, they call it space-time, is because if you light a flashlight, that light travels for infinity. So if you were to, like when we see a star, they always tell you, we're seeing what happened like 30,000 years ago because that light just got here. So we're essentially seeing the beginning, we're seeing the same star, but we're seeing a different point in time than where it's at, but we're looking at it. And that's the idea that I think in space, the way things stretch out with light is the way everything exists all in one moment. So I don't know how much planet to planet fucking transportation's going on. I don't doubt it. But what I do know is the things that are materializing here are doing it with frequency and timelines and stuff.
And when you said the materialize in a different, you know, time,
yeah,
like and the describing the parallel timelines, that was so digestible.
Oh,
like,
that's cool.
I was able to really get that. I had a question that was keeping me up last night. I read this book, was it with the Pleiadians? Have you heard about that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know. Yeah.
He's like, I wrote it. With the
other. I fucked a Pleiadian. It was gnarly. It was one of the gnarliest things I've ever done.
This book, I forget the lady who wrote it, but she was speaking to the Pleiadians, and there was this theory presented in this book, which I read, which was that junk DNA. Have you heard of this?
Yeah.
Okay, so scientists refer to some 90% of our genetic makeup, of our DNA, as junk DNA. They cannot understand what purpose it serves. We only use, they can only identify 10% of our DNA as actually having anything to do with us as organisms. And the theory in this book was that that entities at one point found humans to be dangerous, you know, capable of too much disruption, and went in and unplugged our DNA. It's hard for me to imagine that 90% of our DNA is junk that serves no purpose. That doesn't add up to me, man. I think that the universe is a little bit more intelligent than that. I think our biology is a little more intelligent than that. And if there's anything I've learned about my biology, is that my boner is way harder and way more fun when I'm using Blue Chew tablets. And what are Blue Chew tablets? Well, they're delicious, chewable tablets that have the same active ingredient as both Viagra and Cialis, except they only cost a fraction of the price. Man, dude, I had the best time when I noticed on the packaging that it said, take 1 to 2 tablets. I was like, dude, I can take 2? So yeah, I chewed up 2, and I took Lux to Bone Town. To the boneyard. Yeah, I parked in the pink zone, baby. She doesn't like when I say this, but I plugged into the meat socket. We both had the best time ever. And now, if you're thinking, but what about, like, it's a prescription. I got to go to the doctor. Yep, except you don't have to do that in person at some awkward doctor's office. Hell no. You go to BlueChew.com and you consult with one of their medical providers online. Super fast, super easy, and your Blue Chew tablets are on the way. Now for the best part, you get an entire month's supply completely for free. All you gotta pay is $5 for shipping. I'm telling you, man, could they be cooler? No, they couldn't be cooler. So maybe, my dudes, you want to have a super boner. Maybe you want to get super laid. Go to BlueChew.com. Use the promo code Stevo for an entire month's supply of Blue Chew tablets. All you got to pay is $5 for shipping. Hey, you can thank me later. Now, let's talk about DNA. Because the theory is that the purpose of the junk DNA, 90% of our DNA, was actually that was what made us interdimensional beings. Mm. And so by unplugging our DNA, we no longer operated in
a higher frequency or something.
Yeah, in other dimensions. Yeah. And by relegating us to simply this 3D experience, then, like, without that DNA plugged in, we now kind of feel we don't understand why we're here, what's the meaning of it, we're kind of just in the dark, they rendered us impotent in some kind of level.
Yeah, I don't doubt a version like that at all. I mean, I'm not a geneticist, obviously, anymore. But yeah, I mean, I think the way it looks like to me,
Barbara Marciniak, she was the author.
The way it looks like to me is that something came here and tampered with DNA and all the chimeras and all the weird shit you see on pyramid walls. It's like half man, half bull and all this weird shit. Even when you look at the ancient Sumerian texts, it talks a lot about those who from heaven to earth came and, you know, they created a slave species.
There's the Nephilim.
The Nephilim was part, yes, the giants of the Bible, all that kind of stuff, you know, because the fallen angels took women for wives and had give birth to giants. I mean, there's a whole series of stories and color that we can paint with that someone fucked with our DNA. And I tend to think like that there's something that's been cyclical on Earth where civilizations rise and fall in these Tower of Babel type moments where they will be as gods, strike them down, change their languages and all this weird shit. I really believe there's truth to all that, that as soon as we let off a nuclear weapon, boom, they show up again. Wow, we put all these kids in a zoo and now they're building bombs. We gotta figure this shit out. So I think what I've learned is that all the secrecy around UFOs was for good reason, because we didn't know what it was. Then we thought it was aliens and we realized, holy shit, they're not aliens, there's something else. And then we're like, what do? We need to study this, understand this. We need to build a weaponry or something on a way to push back. We got to do something, but it might take like 70 years. And then like 70 years later, I'm like sitting there like, hey, I got an idea. Let's talk about this. And some of the people were like, it's time to talk about it. Others were like, it's not time, but it's nature. So we got to kind of confront it regardless, but it's very real. It's insanely bigger than you think it is. It's not just a few things in the sky. It's very, very big. I got brought over to Italy. Some dudes with Italian intelligence in Vatican and UN, they were all there, went to military base, had these briefings, and they showed me a map of the Mediterranean. And what was happening was, is on the coast of Sicily, all these like apartments were like catching on fire. Like a microwave, boom, some books, boom, like the fucking couch, boom. And so the government came in and they're like, what the fuck is going on here? So they quarantined the area, get everyone to leave, and they're going, why are things catching on fire? They detected these energy beams, energy weapons or something that were coming off of the way out in the ocean in the Mediterranean. So this dude gets, he was a colonel at the time and he was in charge. Oh, what they looked out and saw were UFOs were out in the ocean fucking around. So the head of the UFO program and the head of the Italian Navy SEALs get on an unmarked civilian helicopter and just fly out to go see what's going on out there. As they're flying, a UFO pops out of the ocean and shoots their fucking helicopter down. I have the documents on the Italian intelligence letterhead. I talked to the two dudes I was in the meeting with that were on the fucking helicopter. I have pictures of the helicopter being chased by the UFO and all the damage that was done to it with some type of microwave weapon or something. And what they found out was that there were airplanes and other helicopters kind of in the area, but the UFO knew that those dudes were looking for him. It's like they can read their minds. It's like we have drones that fly around and listen to people's like cell phones and shit. They do it with thought. Mm-hmm. You know, imagine in advance, sure. Oh yeah, we don't need to listen to their phone. I'll just fucking point my dish at Steve-O and I can hear his, whoa, he's thinking of some weird shit, you know, like
right.
Shoot him down, you know? So, It's just absolutely wild. So the map they showed me of the Mediterranean, they go, these are all the hot spots of what's happening with UFOs just recently. And there was hundreds of marks, hundreds, all over the ocean. There are just things happening everywhere, every day. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, I heard there's a big base under Puerto Rico off the
Rincon. I would imagine, in all over the place in our oceans. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much I want to ask you because it's so fascinating for me. Maybe you can help me find this documentary. I went down the rabbit hole on YouTube 10 years ago, and it was The Man Who Spoke 100 Languages, and he worked, he visited the White House during the Eisenhower, and he was like well-liked and everybody liked him. And then I couldn't find this documentary anywhere. So I'm like, is this a figment of my imagination? Or
there's these stories, Valiant Thor and the stranger at the Pentagon.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where a dude shows up that's super smart, says he's from Venus, and he's hanging out in the Pentagon at these things, and he's giving us all this knowledge. Three things. One, it's either true or it's not. Two, he's lying, he's not from Venus or something. Or three, maybe he's from here, or, you know, and he's lying from where he's from. But the idea of, I'll say it this way, I personally, in my own opinion, subscribe to face-to-face interactions and technology transfer and all that kind of stuff, I believe there's a possibility for that to have existed. I say this because I have pieces of wreckage from the 40s under a defense contract with the government right now. And you can look that up. If you look up Tom DeLonge, Army material, you'll see all the articles. It's the first time in history the U.S. government's talking about doing, you know, a defense contract on purported UFO material. We've had that for a couple of years. It's being studied in like crazy ways. I can't talk much about it. But if I have that, I would imagine that some of the governments on the world have a lot more than I got, you know? Mm-hmm. And we're not saying that this is real. We're saying it's highly anomalous. It's the engineering on this one piece looks to be fucking crazy. And that is still looking to be the case here after having this contract for the past couple of years. They've been studying it. So if there's nothing to this, we would have lost that contract like 2 months into it, you know? So we'll see where it goes and all that kind of stuff. But if I have a piece and it's looking to be pretty gnarly, then I'm assuming that other places have some way bigger pieces. So if that's the case, then it's easy for me to say, well, then I feel there's a high likelihood that there's been encounters, there's been conversations, there's been interactions, there's been landings, there's been technology transfers, there's been something. But I do not know. Like, I can sit there and say, yeah, they brought me in and I hung out with this dude that said he's from Venus. You know, that's never going to happen. But I just think it's highly likely that something like that exists.
As a lay person, I think that my takeaway so far, my general sense is that UFOs, this whole thing, is a good thing because they don't want us to blow up the world with nuclear weapons.
Well, people want that to be the case. I wish that was the case. The evidence doesn't suggest that's the case. I think UFOs don't want us getting too powerful. I don't think that, because you don't just look at the nuclear weapons. You got to go back thousands of years and go, in the earliest documentations of mankind's encounters with the spirit world, what was happening? Just macro brushstroke.
Okay.
And it's always about managing, suppressing consciousness, confusing our belief systems, and keeping us separate from one another and not letting us get powerful. You know?
There was another component of the Pleiadian theory, which was that, and by the way, I think it was like 300,000 years ago they said that they unplugged the DNA. There was another piece to it, which was that the entities that unplugged us were nourished, not by physical matter, but nourished by emotion.
Yeah.
They actually their sustenance was, and specifically fear.
Yes.
So fear feeds this entity that controls us. Mm-hmm. And so it's in their interest that we be afraid.
Yeah, I was just reading a book not so long ago where there's a ufologist that got invited to this seance thing where they were channeling and interacting with this like fucking demon or something. And they're all sitting in a circle, and then they put the one guy in the middle and he starts channeling and gets possessed by this entity. And first the entity's like, hey, we are these entities that are adjacent to you in another timeline and all this stuff, and we can't feel emotion, but we need you to host to help us feel emotion. But then shit starts going horribly wrong, paranormal stuff, the temperature drops, all this weird shit, and everyone in that room except for two people died within 6 months, and weird occurrences. And this guy was one of the guys that didn't. And what I find is really strange about that is that when you know, having a host consciousness in your body, and then looking at some of the visitations and what some of the evidence looks like, it looks like there's beings that don't have, it's like maybe they don't have souls, maybe they're AI, maybe they're a different life form like an insect that grew. It's like, well, I'm not scared of a goldfish, so I leave Earth, I come back 10 billion years later, that goldfish is a T-Rex, and you're like, yeah. Whoa. And then you leave Earth, and then you go, that T-Rex is now like a lot shorter, and it's like a fucking lizard dude that's telepathic and building spaceships. And you're like, it took like 20 billion years, but it happened because no one fucking fucked with this planet, you know?
Right.
So you can see how life just grows in a certain direction. So then you kind of wonder, well, if something grew for millions, billions of years that never had a consciousness to begin with, like a fly or something, and then now it can kind of pop over laterally into our fucking timeline, it's going to come on you like flies on dog shit. Oh, what is this? Huh? What is this? And they're just like looking at you.
Right.
How scary would that be if you're in your bed and you got these big bug-eyed insects that are like, what are you? What is going on? And they start cutting you open. And they're like, and then all of a sudden you get scared. And they're like, that's an interesting energy. They'll feel that. We can feel something. You know, I can see that being the case where emotion and feeling and love is like so gnarly. It's like they want to understand it. They want to have it. But what if they figure out, like, hypothetically, what if they figure out that, that we're immortal, that our soul is part of something greater and bigger.
Right.
And we might die and have a painful life, but we learned a lot of lessons, and we might reincarnate, you know, to learn more, whatever. And they're sitting here going, if we die, we have nothing. They're all, we want that. And then what if we have those interactions and we start writing books in the Bible that says Satan wants your soul, demons want your soul, you know? It starts to all make a little bit more sense, right?
It's a crazy bigger picture.
It's just me riffing. I'm not saying anything. Just me riffing.
So is that what they're doing when they're like abducting people, like that Fire in the Sky movie?
The evidence from people that have had interactions for fucking thousands of years, including the past 100 years, on all different types of people, ethnicities, and different fucking cultures and different continents, tends to point the same direction, that they're very interested in our consciousness and our soul. And they're very interested in making sure that we don't know they're here and that we don't all align and understand who we are, what we're capable of. And like, because the truth is once we understand what consciousness is, and it's not Jesus, you know,
right.
Once we understand that, then we start realizing you can move objects with your mind. You can hear people's thoughts telepathically. Like if you meet a chick and she wants to fuck you, that's telepathy, but it's such a primal animal frequency, you can feel it. Wow, this chick's like game, right? But if you see that same chick and she's sad, you don't really feel that just instantly. You might kind of. It's just not as strong and easy as like a sexual kind of frequency or something. Well, that's all telepathy. And I think like once we learn like what we're capable of and how to use, how to transduce our environment, I mean, because they're already doing this. Dude, I just downloaded a shit ton of documents 2 days ago from the McDonnell Douglas Corporation aircrafts in the 50s, and it's all from the tangential programs of the main UFO program describing how to merge your conscious and subconscious together to move objects with your mind and how that's going to relate to the propulsion system. It's fucking crazy. Your thought will move the craft.
So that's what Bob Lazar was talking about, how they're building the crafts. Was
Bob Lazar is the reason we all know about Area 51 is because of him. My company, To the Stars, put out his autobiography. It's called Dreamland. It's rad.
Yeah.
It's totally rad. Yeah. And I believe him. I think he's telling the truth.
When you say that they're worried, the UFOs don't want humans to become too powerful, like...
And I think there's more than one, too. Like, I don't think there's, like, one group here. So it's hard.
Like we all grays.
Sure.
It's like, it's like when we... It would be more better to say UFOs. It's probably better to say, you know, competing intelligences. Because who knows? Right. It's like you're in the ocean. You see a dolphin. So you're like, okay, so this place is full of dolphins. Then you see a fucking jellyfish. You're like, whoa, that's weird. You see a whale. But then you see a Coke can. And you're like... Then you find the boat. But you're still not even thinking that the boat's from land, you know? So we don't know. The universe has all that, you know?
Fair point. I just think that, like, when I think of humans becoming too powerful, that's a concept that I can kind of grasp when I see the way, you know, just consider the way we've paved over the world. We've, like, you know, environmental destruction, you know, like, I feel like we've kind of become too powerful.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think anyone can disagree that, like, we're, like, destroying the planet and destroying each other, which is, like, we have the technology to do that before we have the spirituality to not do that, you know?
Right.
It's like we, this idea that, you know, but this is the other thing. The universe, to me, it looks to be what we call duality, where every particle has a counterpart. So every atom has like a negative and a positive particle.
The realm of the relative.
And well, you have light, you have dark, you have opposites, you have the past and the future. Everything is like duality. So even when you look at Earth, there's a dual system. You have democracy and freedom and free will, and then you have authoritarianism and controlled and absence of love, absence of individuality, and it's competing systems, but I think it's representative of the universe we live in. You got to think of the yin and the yang symbol. That's like very real. That's duality. Every ancient religion talked of duality. We have heaven and hell. The Mayans had the two-faced god or whatever. The Gnostics had the exact same thing, where you have, you know, varying versions of a supreme loving kind of realm and something that's opposite, that's entropy and falling apart. And I think that, like, I think we're just stuck in the middle of it, you know?
Are you familiar with Neil Donald Walsh?
No, but I am familiar with Neil Armstrong. Is he the same?
No. Neil Donald Walsh wrote a series of books called Conversations with God.
I've heard of that.
And I love that. We both love that.
Is it rad? Yeah, okay.
It's super rad. And the concept there is that that the universe, God, is absolute love, pure love, but being absolute, just one thing, you know, we're all familiar with the concept of oneness, you know, we are all one. Mm-hmm. But as just one thing, being absolute love, it has no ability to have experience because it's only one thing. It needs another, something to relate to.
A reflection of itself.
Right. Yeah. So the actual universe, this is the theory, the universe is an exercise in that absolute love experiencing itself, where it divides itself into a multitude of parts, so that each part can relate to the other part. And only and in that move, you go from the absolute realm to the relative realm.
Yeah.
And relative meaning that you can't have... Nothing can be cold unless you have hot.
Yep.
You know, nothing can be up unless you have down.
Yep.
And so it's all, you know, that division of the absolute creates the ability for there to be experience.
Yep. And I totally subscribe to that.
And thus we are all, and all of creation is an exercise in God experiencing itself.
Totally. And I think, like, you know, there's a guy who wrote a fascinating book called My Big Toe, The Theory of Everything. Is this, like, crazy physicist trying to figure out how it all works, and he said the same thing. If there is like one source unified mind, the only way for it to evolve, because you devolve or evolve, is to break off pieces of itself and learn lessons without knowing the answer. Like, we're in a quiz, and if someone goes, dude, you can die, you're immortal, you're fine, you're like, oh shit, then fuck it, I'll jump in front of a train, you know?
Right.
Nothing matters. But if you don't know that, then you'll act differently and you'll learn differently and you'll have compassion and all these different things. And then source can grow. And I think the difference here is, what's interesting is the way I see it in my mind, it's, imagine you have like the shoebox of light, and that's like the fucking love, you know, everything's combined and we're all one. And then you have a shoebox of pitch blackness, that's the absence of that. And then you shove them together and all the light goes dark, but all you're left with these little specks of light in the darkness. Those are like stars, and those are spitting out, and those grow out onto planets and create these little life forms that experience thing. And everything's existing in the same place. And that's where you get kind of the geometries, they show you those shapes where the staircases spiral down or plants grow in a spiral. It's like holographic, like everything is existing within the same location, going into itself, almost like a hologram. If you look at it, and I see a picture of you in 3D, and I break it into like a bunch of glass pieces, every piece contains you. Did you know that? I can take a broken piece of that hologram and look down, and I'll see your whole body, even though it's just like your ear. You know, it's like that's just every hologram that we fuck around with and we print with lasers and do something funny are cool with it. But that's kind of how the universe is. It's like everything's within itself.
Yeah. Somebody just said one line that I just grabbed onto so much. We are all eyes in the same head.
That's pretty interesting.
Mm.
We are all dicks in the same underpants. pretty much the exact same. You know what's
right,
funny?
Right, right.
Did you ever think that you'd be here going talking about like conversations with God and shit? Like, what happened to you?
I mean, it's something that began for me, like, before sobriety and shit, you know? Like, I did drugs to the point where the compartments between different things eroded.
Yeah.
And I really, really latch on. It resonates with me what you said about the frequencies. High frequency is love, and then down here it gets darker, and you know. And for me, drugs became super spiritual. Like, where I had hallucinations. I was hearing voices. I was like seeing, like odd, like I was seeing people walk around who were never physically there. Yeah. I was hearing voices. I was, it was just all of this otherworldly shit. And I was so fucking like blown away by it. I loved it so much. I just kept piling more drugs into my body to keep it happening.
Yeah, yeah.
This was my spiritual connection. And, the thing about that, it was as fascinating as it was, as much as I loved it, like it, I recognized that that was a dangerous approach to spirituality, because I believe the drugs I was doing eroded the barriers between other
dimensionary. It's opening up the dial, and you're getting flooded with so much shit.
Right. Yeah. But by doing it that way, you're letting in like just all fucking,
who knows what's coming in,
demon ass shit.
Yeah, you're tuned into a radio station, and you said, let's just listen to all the stations at once. You know,
what drug did it the most for you? What drug dissolved the barriers the most, or was it like?
It was 3 days of cocaine and huffing like nitrous oxide.
That's gnarly. What if he said estrogen? He's all, I used to do so much estrogen. It was insane, dude. That's heavy. I mean,
it would always be 3 days of cocaine, and
I would basically do cocaine for 3 days, and I'd be doing inhaling nitrous oxide the whole time. And the more sleep deprived, more
so gnarly.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they should have studied you in the government, because I think they're like, they got all into LSD and all that shit in the 60s. I used to need the Steve-O kid. Like, we got to see what the fuck it's all. He knows everything about drugs. Let's fucking figure it out.
But were you like doing drugs? You're like, all right, day two, I got one more day and then I can start seeing some shit, or it just happened? And
I think day three, his body's shutting down and he's like, probably time to stop. I don't know if it was a plan. Yeah. Right?
I mean, like, generally, day three was where I was
on. It's like Navy SEAL Hell Week, except they're not on coke, but there's sleep deprivation and stuff.
I was on my final stretch at that point. But, you know, like, compared to now, and I've got, like, when you were talking about how we're not reactive, but we're inducers.
We're inducer. We're creating. We're literally, right. This is quantum physics. Like, we don't know this. But right. The scientists know this.
Well, I'm so struck by that, because for 924 consecutive days, I've maintained an average of over 40 minutes of meditation every single day.
That's fucking great.
And I'm terrified to stop.
Well, let me tell you something that's really dope. So my friend Mark from Blink got cancer, and he's cool now, like he got it all, like it's all taken care of. But when it happened, I was like, I know that energy healing works. And so I called up my partner from CIA, and he goes, dude, he's all, it's very real. He's all, whenever we have people within the agency that get sick, we send them to this one guy. And what they do is, it's a really cool story. There's a PhD that saw this dude that was energy healing, you know, and he's like, well, I want to test you in the lab. And so they set up all these experiments with all these mice, gave all the mice cancer. And the day before or something, the energy healer was like, I can't do it. And so they're just going to shut the thing down. But then one of the technicians told the PhD guy, she's like, well, why don't you just do it? You knew what he was doing. He goes, I can't do it. He's like, special. No, he just puts his hands near something and focuses intention and whatever. Just do it. You already spent the money. You already got the fucking mice that are sick. Well, all of these mice were 100, not 90%, not 70%, 100% going to die on day 27, because they gave them that type of cancer. They do it all the time. So he goes up there and he goes, okay, spends a few hours each day, hands on the cage, just intending, all you do is focus on destroying the tumors, helping healthy mice. Nothing's happening. It's like week two and there's a fucking nothing happening. So he's going to cancel. She's like, just keep going. Just do the full fucking 27 days. Well, like on day 20, 21, the tumors start exploding. Starts healing all the mice. They take the blood out of the mice, go to a different cage, put it in there, but fucking heals those mice. None of the mice can ever get that cancer again. They then do energy healing on a cotton swab. and they mail the cotton swab across the country, put that cotton swab in with some mice, it heals those fucking mice. And what it's led to was a profound discovery that consciousness, again, is what dictates physical everything. And if you meditate, or you pray, or you get on your knees and fucking focus on, it doesn't matter, when you shut your mind down and open up bandwidth to God, source, it doesn't, physics doesn't care if you think it's Allah, Jesus, consciousness, sure. just shut your mind down, you can do anything because you're a transducer of your environment. So you can heal shit, you can heal cancer, you can walk on water like Jesus, you can lay on a bed of nails, you can walk across fire, you can levitate. My partner, the physicist, was dispatched by the DOD to the Middle East to check out these dudes that were meditating and levitating, like we see in cartoons, you know, like, woo, you know, the snake comes out and he levitates. That was happening. And they couldn't understand why, because it was consciousness. Like, so my point is like, we're so powerful, we don't even know it. And I'm not saying I know how to do all this shit, but I'm telling you, it's like real.
For sure. I'm terrified of ever missing a meditation. Like, I'd keep track of it on an app.
You know what you need to do? This is what you need. I'm not saying I know how to do this, but you meditate like way more than I do, and I wish I did it like you. But what the real goal is, to meditate while you're walking around. And that's like monk shit. That's like Jedi.
My deal is like mantra meditation. Okay. So like I'm just sitting still and
yeah. Could you imagine if like right now you're fucking locked in?
Yeah, I mean,
you'd be like Luke Skywalker. I'm telling you, it's like Jedi shit.
I really subscribe to it. Here's something that I've said a lot. Like we were talking about it this morning. You know, like most people's problem is that they don't have a goal. Yeah. You can't accomplish
a purpose.
Goal. You can't accomplish something purpose, without first identifying what you want to accomplish.
Because when you have a purpose or a goal, you are creating that. Remember? Like, yeah. If you don't have one, what are you creating? Like, right. If you're working towards something, you're envisioning it, you're thinking about it, you're planning it, you're making steps to get there, that is manifesting that reality. That's how it starts. And if you don't have that, then it's kind of vacant, you know?
For sure. And and once you've identified a goal, then intelligence is helpful for sort of conceiving ways to you know, accomplish it. Certainly, talent is helpful, you know, for like, but nothing comes fucking close to enthusiasm.
Interesting.
Enthusiasm is the engine which drives the human experience. Like, it doesn't matter.
I believe that, yeah.
It doesn't fucking matter if I'm talented or intelligent. If I fucking have passion, then I'm gonna make it happen. And then, as I related this, you know, this many times, and then just out of nowhere, somebody offered up on their own without me even. They said, the Latin root for the word enthusiasm is en theos, which means with God.
Wow, that's dope.
So
love
so,
that.
It's cool.
Yeah,
so
it's
when
cool.
when you're fucking on fire for something,
you're with God.
You're with God. You're doing God's work. You're
doing the Lord's work.
And I love that too, man.
So when you're horny and you're really passionately horny, doing it, I'm with God.
Yeah, I mean, whenever people historically and you know would ask me advice on something, say, you know. Like, how do I do this? Well, my first advice is whatever it is you want to do or get good at, start doing it. You know, yeah. Don't wait for someone to pick you. Don't wait for the stars to line up.
Yep.
You know, start doing it with one caveat. Make sure that you're not, that you're learning the right way. Because we can, like, get all on one and then start, like, learning bad habits. You don't want to learn bad habits that you're going to have to unlearn. So maybe find a mentor, somebody who's...
Done it before.
Somebody who can make sure you're on the right track.
Like, you know? Nodis.
Right, yeah. find a way to make sure that you're learning the correct way, but waste no time, start doing it. And then I would say, it doesn't matter what you want to accomplish. It simply matters how fucking bad you want it.
Oh, I so agree with that. Yeah.
That enthusiasm. And,
love that.
And I think that for me, this is where my meditation comes in, is that I feel that it plugs me in. I plug into this fucking source, whatever, mm-hmm. where like I've got the intention, you yeah. know, I've got the intention, I've got the fucking enthusiasm, and I just plug into the source, which I fucking believe that the universe conspires in my favor because I meditate.
No, it does. Dude, trust me, you're not the first person that works for. Like, I know people that are so hardcore on that because it literally dictates everything else is calm, clear, present, and things just start happening for you because you connect and you let all the bullshit go and you just get like this the juice of fuel that you need. I mean, you're a consciousness, you know, you're a being that's living through consciousness. So why would you not stop to refuel that tank? You know, I totally subscribe to it, and I think it's really awesome that you do it, you know?
Well, thanks, man.
Yeah, when I first met Mario, our buddy Mario, he said he grew up with you in you know, New Mexico, and he said you just always go up to people like, hi, my name is Steve, I'm going to be on TV one day.
Love that.
And I think the difference between you and somebody else is like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but was there any doubt that one day you'd be on TV? Or did you know?
I was pretty...
Because that's enthusiasm.
Yeah, oh dear, I had tireless enthusiasm. I believed that one of two things was going to happen. I was going to either make my mark and become famous in life, or all of the video that I was, you know, recording and effectively stuffing into a bottle would be discovered after I died.
Yeah, one of the two, but you will make it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. That was what everything that I was about. I was like, oh dude, this footage lives forever. Like, this footage lives, so let me make sure this footage is fucking badass.
I gotta tell you, when you did the fucking Wild Boys,
yeah,
that thing with the hot dogs and the lions was the gnarliest thing I think I've ever seen in my life.
Because
you just remember you falling from the hammock into the lions.
Right.
What the fuck were you guys thinking? So heavy.
Yeah, it was heavy. The first trip we took to film the pilot for Wild Boys, we went out to South Africa because that's where they had the great white sharks. We wanted to jump off the boat next to the great white shark. That was
crazy.
Like the main reason why we did the pilot in South Africa. We also brought a zebra suit, two-man zebra suit, for us to go on safari. We wanted to get a shot with the lion while we're
so
in the
gnarly.
Zebra suit. They told us, like, that's not how it fucking works. You don't fucking, you know, like, you don't fuck around with lions like that. Nobody, we brought the suit out there, We brought the zebra suit out there to do that, and they're like, no. So, like, we would get in the zebra suit on safari, like, when there was, like, different scenes going on, but never with an actual lion around, because no one would let us do that. So we had all this footage, and then we're like, well, fuck, what are we going to do? And they had this company called Hollywood Animals in California, and so we got the final shot. Final bit was shot in California with one of these fucking
so funny, so gnarly.
And so everything that where we're with lions, like up in the tree with the lions, or, you know, like that's Hollywood Animals.
Still scary,
dude.
Dude, I don't give a fuck. It's a lion, dude. Was it not a lion all of a sudden?
Yeah.
It's still a lion.
It's a lion, dude.
It's gnarly.
It's so gnarly.
And my closest call with death was a lion climbing up a tree and getting all on me, and like moments before, I had made some snarky comment about Siegfried and Roy. It was like,
you got a lesson, a life lesson.
Yeah, dude, I got a major life lesson. But dude, like, among the most fascinating fucking conversations we've ever had.
Oh, good, Dan. I appreciate that. Yeah.
For sure.
I appreciate both you guys.
Yeah,
and
dude,
I got to jump back in the studio.
We appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you so much, and. Like anything, I'm gonna steal this from Mike Tyson every time. There's millions of people. What do you want to say to them?
What do I want to say to all these people? I want to say that a lot of people don't understand me or my thinking or what I'm doing. A lot of people hear the UFO thing and don't really get it. My company, To the Stars, has really gotten itself in a really cool position to help you understand all these things. That are a lot to digest for people, and it still comes from this kind of rebellious punk rock skateboarder youth that I've always been, which was like, kind of do my own thing, you know, and I chase things that I think can make the world cooler or better or funnier or happier. And I really believe that I'm kind of in the epicenter of a lot of really cool things, but you know, that are going to really influence the world. But the movies and all the things I'm making are really a direct result of the people I work with, the things that I've figured out, the things that we're doing with the government, and like really trying to get people to understand that you're powerful, you're fucking awesome, and you can make life what you want. It, you just got to understand how it works. And that's kind of the realm that I think humans are in right now. We're going to start to learn, because it's been secret for so long, what we're capable of and how this all works. And it's going to profoundly change the human experience in a way that you're already discovering. You, I don't know, man. You're just not doing it yet.
Questionable.
Questionable. All right. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, man. Thanks. Fuck yeah, brother. That was great.
All right, kids.
And there you have it. That's one cool dude. I mean, one crazy dude, but one cool dude. I really like him. And you know, I'm going to say, I really, really like you for sticking around to the end of the podcast. My street team, the people that really show me that love, and who I appreciate so much. And let me, what can I tell you today? I just started signing the pages, which are bound into the book, my new book. It's called A Hard Kick in the Nuts: What I Learned from a Lifetime of Terrible Decisions. It's a book of wisdom. Man, I got quotes from Knoxville and Dana White on the cover, waiting on one from Whitney Cummings. And I think I can safely say the only way that you can possibly get a autographed copy of the hardcover version is by pre-ordering it. And why is that? Is because, man, it's all about the pre-orders. Like, on the first week when the book comes out, it like automatically all of the pre-orders count toward that first week. And that's going to have all kinds of bearing on where the book lands on the New York Times bestseller list. And dude, this book is so ferociously good. I'm dying for it to be number one on the New York Times bestseller list. And so please help me get there. I promise you this book will not let you down. It's juicier than hell. And if you go to my website, stevo.com, right at the top of the website, it's click here for the pre-order, and you got to pick the right distributor to get the signed ones. But yeah, I'm up there signing these pages like crazy. It's the legit Dickograph. It's the epic book, and please pre-order it at stevo.com. A Hard Kick in the Nuts. I love you. Thank you so much.